Okay, as we approach Daf Gimel here, as we begin Daf Gimel, so we have the basis for a ripped for the headlines discussion. A very recent event that got some degree of public attention. I don't know how much you guys would have seen about it. Is anyone here familiar with the Banksy paper painting shredding incident? Okay. Painting shredding. All right, let's explain. For those of you who are not familiar for some reason, it was in the news about 2.5 weeks ago. I believe it was October 5th. So there was an incident. If you know who Banksy is, then that's impressive because no one knows who Banksy is. He's an anonymous artist who goes around depositing art in various contexts. He does graffiti and other works,
street art,
and he's an activist, and he's anonymous, and he has a certain mahalach in things. So as part of this mahalach, he did an unusual step a few weeks ago on October 5th. So there was a painting of his that was sold at an auction at Sotheby's, and it went for just over £1 million. This is in England. So it went for just over £1 million. And then as soon as the gavel went down, the schivus is official. So right after that, something was activated somehow. They still don't know exactly how. But he had a shredder that was built into the picture frame. And the picture started descending into the shredder and was partially shredded. It was about half shredded. And then it stopped. So, for argument's sake, we won't get into the question of when the kinyan was made. You know, all of that's going to complicate matters. So let's assume, for the sake of our discussion, that the purchaser took possession of and took ownership of the painting at that moment once the bid was accepted. That's certainly arguable, but let's assume for now that that's the case. So this act of hezek that was done now by a non-owner, the artist is no longer the owner of the painting, this act of hezek that was done seems pretty bad, except that the assumption is that the hezek itself was a maisa art, was itself a performance. Have an appropriately baffled look. This is maybe not your world, but in any event, this is not, I think most of us don't really have too much experience with these kind of things. But the premise seems to be, I have to see whether this is true or not, that because this is a unique mice of Banksy, at the moment that this was taking place in front of everybody, and it was caught on video, and this now is such a unique event that the claim is that the value of the painting is actually going to go up. They said that as much as 50%. So this woman paid £1 million for it. It's now worth £1.5 million. So essentially what we have here is a maisa hezek. Ein lecha hezek yaiser mishredding. Shredding is there l'shem hezek. And so you have a maisa hezek, but a maisa hezek which the claim is leaves the nizak with an item that is now worth more than it was before. So is the mazik chayiv for such an act? Maury? Well, it might be related, right? The whole Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha component. Although this is a unique kind of thing. This isn't a normal improvement of something.
It's a good increase in value.
Right. So it's an interesting kind of model of that. So this is a question Poskim discuss. What happens if the Maisa Hezek actually ends up increasing the value? Dabadaya?
So just to clarify, so Banksy was the one who made the frame in this way.
Yes,
and
he was the artist.
Hands on the picture.
Well, he was the artist, and he also planned this whole thing. He built a shredder into the frame. Somehow activated it. They still don't know actually how he pulled that off.
He was probably in the crowd somewhere. The guy
who was filming it, they think it was him. Who knows? But Lemaisa is he's the artist and the mazik. And he did his Maisa Hezek. So it was sold at auction. The moment the woman who won the auction got her bid accepted and the gavel went down, it was shredded at that moment.
But what's the hanah for him to shred it?
It may not be any hanah.
For him, for the
right. I mean, the Maisa, it's a Maisa, it's a prank. It's a Maisa. It's a Maisa artwork.
It's a Maisa performance. But that readers the artwork of the work.
It's right, although that's not enough for him. Yeah. Sorry?
It's like a symbolic act.
Yeah, it's something. It's all shitaso.
Can we say it's the Hanah of like getting back at the art community? If he's,
well, we don't know that.
Activist in this respect, that he enjoys kind of. It's kind of like the dog that was like getting hit and turns around and bites the person.
Yeah, but I don't know if we need to find Hanah in this. Sounds funny by itself. I don't know if we need to look for his hana in terms of a chiyuv. All right, we know that there's a maisa has a cure.
Sorry? If you want to be magdir, it's shame, no?
We'll have to see. We'll have to be magdir. But it's hard to call it shame. But we'll let's see. The fact is that, maybe it isn't hard to call it that. Let's see. But the fact is you have this maisa hezek. So we can talk about what category. But is there a chiyuv considering the fact that this maisa ended up increasing the value of the item, assuming the claim is correct? Sam?
I forget who it was and kind of lost the context of what we're saying. Isn't there, we went through like a long list of like different ways, whatever action can tweak the chiyuv, and we said like at one point, like if you mm-hmm. have two glasses, one
right. Moves up. Okay, so let's get to that now. So, as Sam is correctly remembering, so at the beginning of this man, we talked about how the chiyuv for a mazik seems to have four different components to it. And any one of them can be tweaked and can then provoke a question as to whether the chiyuv is still there. And one of the, let's say two of the components that were relevant here is a maisa hezek, and a hefsid that is caused to the owner. So here, it seems like you have one of those things. You have the maisa hezek. And the question mark is on whether there is a hefsid that is gone to the owner. And again, we're going to call this purchaser the owner, even though one can argue whether this is actually in her rishus yet, but we will consider for our discussion as if there's ownership from the time of the gavel going down. So who's up first, Maury?
I'm happy to fight for it.
Okay. Yes.
How come Rebbe doesn't think that it's that the damaged chafetz and the ma'is ezek are the value depreciation and the hefsid of the baal might not be? Because it's not really hefsid of the baal if the item is appreciating, and if the item is appreciating, then it's certainly not a value depreciation.
Say that again, that if the
four components were damaged
right.
object, the value depreciation has at the bottom, and the maisa hezek.
Right.
There's a maisa hezek, and there's arguably, a damaged chafetz. The object was
right.
damaged. But there might not be a hefsa. I feel like there might not be a hefsa of the bottle or value depreciation, especially if there's...
Right, we only mentioned two of the four, but you're correct in saying once we list all four, then
there's... Did we say there's only a maisa hezek?
There's a maisa hezek, and there may not be a loss to the nizak. And
sorry, I
right, no, I mean, you're correct.
I thought you were saying there's only a maisa hezek.
Yeah, and we only isolated two out of the four for that sentence. You're correct that once you look at all of them, then those two are a question.
We could call it two out of four.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
so
I'm
is no problem. Who else had a hand up? Yes?
Quick clarification. Does it matter at all that the Maaseh Hezek was done by the original seller? Is that at all relevant to the discussion?
It shouldn't be. It's only complicated here, like I said, because who knows if you want to really call this a kinyan at this point. So for the sake of our discussion, we're gonna take that out of discussion. So let's assume.
Do we have a concept of auction?
Yes, but when exactly the kinyan is made is a little more complicated. So I want to keep that issue out of it. So let's pretend for our purposes that somebody sold a painting, you took it home, and then I went home, and I, as the artist, I went home and I did something to your painting. Yeah, but here it's because it was the artist that did it. That's what, right, so it's harder to come up with an example. So here it's because it was the artist doing it that it became an extension of the original art and actually increased the value.
It's, is it not the same case as like when you have two paintings?
Ah, okay. So yes. So it's very possibly parallel to that. Yeah. So that case I want to get into now. We mentioned at the beginning of this mind. We didn't go into any detail. So now I'd like to explore that. So you're correct that there is a parallel to be drawn.
Does the fact that it was like a premeditated act of Hezek change anything about? Does that not matter?
Not necessarily. May affect what category it is, but it doesn't help the victim here. Okay, so Yossi is correct that this is evocative of another case that we spoke about, and a number of poskim talked about. We only alluded to it, we didn't get into any detail, so I'd like to today to get into a little detail about it. There are a number of angles to pursue. It'll probably take us more than a day and more than today's Mar Makomos, but at least to get started with it and ultimately to come back to this case specifically. But we'll explore the more commonly discussed case, mostly because a number of Achronim who talked about it thought that it was relevant to Bava Kamma Daf Gimel. So as our opportunity now at the top of Bava Kamma Daf Gimel, many felt that this Gemara over here is relevant, so we will take this opportunity to talk about it. So there are different versions, essentially the same question. Let's say somebody has two paintings, or in some of the discussions, it's two rare stamps. But they have two collectible items. Each one is worth a hefty sum of money. For argument's sake, let's say each one is worth $500,000. And the mazik comes and destroys one painting or one stamp. Why does he do this? Who knows? Maybe he also owns one of the paintings and one of the stamps, and he will benefit also from there being fewer of them in the world. Who knows? But whatever it is, so he is mazik one of your two paintings or stamps. But the effect of that is that because he reduces the amount that there are in the world, so now the one that you have left is worth twice as much. So is he chayiv to pay under those circumstances? You know, if you meet the older people who were around in the 30s and 40s, they always have charata that their mothers threw out their comic books when they were kids, because if they hadn't, they would be rich because they'd be worth millions of dollars. They have the first Superman or the first Batman or whatever. But, of course, it's a little bit of a stira, because the only reason it's worth that much is because most of the mothers threw them out. So if all of their mothers had not thrown them out, so then there would be many of them and they wouldn't be worth that much. So it's also like the alchemy problem. If you could turn everything into gold, then gold wouldn't be so valuable. So then what are you accomplishing? I don't know. It's not the only problem with alchemy. But essentially, these are among the issues. So there's these inherent stiras. You know, we wish we all had all these valuable things, but if we all did, then they wouldn't be valuable. So there is the value that comes from scarcity. So if this mazik ends up leaving the nizuk with the same value, is there a chiyuv tashlum? Yes, sir.
Does, I feel like it tells us a little bit about how we evaluate or appreciate, like, the value of an object. We're looking at how much the Baal himself, he has a worth, and he's not losing any worth because there's no lost value. It's being destroyed, it's transferred to the value of another one. And we don't evaluate by the how much each object that he has costs.
Maybe we do. That's why I'm not sure what the answer yet is. We'll see if we'll end up being sure what the answer is, but that's a part of the question. You're correct that that's not at all obvious. And the assumption that we should only look at his bank account and not look at this object by itself, that is very much an open question. So, as I mentioned, this is discussed in a number of Sfarim. It's a popular question. And many assumed, and this is also true about Rav Soloveitchik in his Shiurim, as it is brought down in the Rishima Shiurim, that one of the main sources to consider is the top of Bava Kamma Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. So it's a somewhat complicated Gemara you saw today, that the Gemara is trying to figure out why do we have all the various words in Psukim that we do in terms of Shein, ultimately Regel. Why do we need all of these languages? And the Gemara explains that we could have thought that there is a chiyuv only when mechal yekarna, and not when not mechal yekarna. So ultimately, there's a chiyuv in both situations, but you could have thought there was a distinction. Now, what does mechal yekarna mean? So we can translate it literally, but what does it mean symbolically? That's where we find a significant machlokas harishonim, and really three approaches to it. There's Rashi and Tosfos and also the Rashba. What do the words mean though? So here Karen should not be confused with the Karen in the Mazik sense, not talking about horn, but it's talking about the principle. You know, the principle is that which provides all the growth, is essentially the golden goose. So is there a distinction? Let's say somebody is a mazik, some type of plant or something that grows. So is there a distinction between a hezik that completely consumes the item and everything with it? So we'll call mechal yekarna, or one that stops short of that? Now that's again literal translation. What does it mean in terms of what it actually represents? So here's where there is a machlokas. What does Rashi say it means? Alright, according to Rashi, the Rashi here, Idi V'Idi. What's an example of Lo Chal Yekarna? Rashi says, Demashma Kagon Sha'ochla Aruga V'Sofo Lachzor V'Litzmach Avalo Ketchila. That maybe that's referring to a situation where there was some type of produce that an animal came and ate, but he didn't eat it in such a way that it's never going to grow again. It'll grow back, but it's still damaged because when it grows back, it's not going to be what it was. So ultimately, there's a damage. Yes, sir.
Practically, what would that look like?
Either you mean, would you get a picture?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, not actually, but like, if you're talking about, like, we're using the example we discussed in this, essentially, a blueberry bush.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we're saying that this animal, you know, ate the entire blueberry bush, but it grew back, but it was, like, somewhat deformed or whatever, or it didn't produce any berries the next, you know, cycle, so.
That could be. We'll see. There's a little bit of a discussion if there are other possible models here. But let's assume that. Let's assume that right now it was a bush that, because of what it generated, I don't even know how much these things potentially could be worth. But I don't know. Let's say it had $100 of produce that's associated with it right now. And what it's going to grow back to is only going to get $50 worth. So, suggests Rashi, that could be what we're talking about. Maury.
Does anyone view it as a new chafetz now? So it's not going to grow back the same way? It's inherently not the same thing.
Could be. It It's a reasonable way to view it. So let's see what the possibilities are. Right. So that's a definition of, as opposed to where you ate the whole bush completely and it's gone. So there's a total hezek here. It's a total loss. Here, it's not a total loss. It's going to grow back. But it's a loss because when it grows back, then it's not going to be what it was. Now, it's very interesting about the Rashi, if you think about it. So what's Rashi saying? That it's a partial loss still because it's not going to be what it was. Well, what if it did grow back completely? What if it grew back perfectly? Essentially, right? Because you're saying that there's no hefsid to the bialim there. If you ate, if your dog, your animal ate this produce and it all grew back, so nothing was taken away from the owner? Jed?
It might have grown even more had it not damaged.
So that's also true. Right? But let's assume it was equal. But that means there's no loss? Let's say there's $100 worth of produce here and your animal ate it and it grew back another $100 worth. Exact same amount. So there's no loss to the owner? So Sammy says that seems to be Tosis's question. Right, because the assumption that's not a problem and that's not Mechal Yekarna, so Tosus objects to that. So you see the first Tosus on the page. Perisha Kuntris, Shachet Sha'asid Litzmoach, Avalo Kitchila. So Vakasha, Ha Mechal Yekarna, that actually is complete loss. Why? Because Gam Habailim Heim Yecholim Liktzor. The owner himself could have taken that produce. So therefore, there's value here that he could have claimed and used. And instead, this guy's dog or this guy's cow came and ate the whole thing that could have been his. So why is that not a straight out loss? That's a complete hafsid. So says Tosfos, that's not the situation. So we're talking about where he didn't actually eat it at all. So he damaged it in some other way. And we mentioned last week extensively different interpretations of what tinfa peiris lahanasa means. But it's some type of a toldo. So that's what we're talking about. And he goes on to say, "Mikol Malkom, Karle Lakaman Latifas Peris Lahanasa Tolda." Still, it is a Tolda. It's not the Av Kaven De Pashte Dekra Ayri Bachila De Machal Yekarna. That when we talk about a shame in a Pashup Shat, so the literal interpretation of the pasuk would suggest that it is completely eating and consuming something. So that is the most perfect parallel to a shein in its normal sense. So something which is not the Mechal Yekarna is a tolda. But still, essentially, that's what it could be. Something like tinfa peiris lahanasa, as opposed to eating part of it and having it grow back. Okay, so that's the machlokus here between Rashi and Tosfos. Yes, sir?
I'm
still
talking about that point. So we're saying that an achila, no matter what, achila, you eat the entire bush, it's not considered machla as a karna.
Say, the eating is what? Sorry?
That eating the, if the animals eat the entire bush and leave literally nothing left, not even a stump on the bottom,
mm-hmm.
That would not be.
And it's not going to grow back. There's nothing to make it grow back.
Right.
Yeah, right. So in that case, Rashi would say that's machal yekarna.
Fine, but as Tosfos is.
Well, the Messias is whatever it is, but Rashi says that if the Messias is that it's going to grow back, so then that's not Mechal Yekarna. So where's the Hefsid? The Hefsid is because it grows back not as good. So the difference between what it could have been and what it is. And Tosfos says no, what was actually consumed is a loss there completely. So to say that there's something partial about it, you have to change it to something else, like tinfa peris lahanas. And the Rashba has another angle on this. The Rashba writes that what we're talking about here is sometimes there is actual benefit to having this produce reduced this way, to having this bush trimmed essentially by having it consumed. And it's theoretically possible that the owner may have done this himself. The owner may have decided, you know what, this bush is not growing so great, I want it to grow better, so I will take my own dog or whatever animal and have him eat it so that it's going to grow better. So even though that's something that could have benefited the owner and he may have chosen to do on purpose, nonetheless, he still has the right to come to you when your animal does it on his property and say, you have to pay me for the damage that you caused. Okay, so far so good. So those are the three approaches the Rishonim take to this whole discussion. Hi.
So for the Rashba, what would he say is lo mecha yekarna?
So what is lo mecha yekarna is essentially that situation that you trimmed it, you ate part of it. Not even that it's an impartial hezek; it's actually ultimately going to be beneficial for the nizak. But still, it doesn't matter that it's beneficial to the nizak, and that it's something he could have chosen to do himself. Lamaisa, he still has the right to tell the person who did this to him, he's got to pay.
So he's sort of on page with Tosos then.
More than Rashi.
And Mechaya Karna for him is...
would be something that completely leaves you with nothing.
Which is more like Rashi.
Right, that part is. So, Rav Soloveitchik has a discussion about this in the Rishima Shirim. And it's interesting. He, just to highlight the basic mahalach that he has here, but a lot of these details, as I'll just point out to you, are a little bit subject to modification or disagreements. One thing he says is in terms of Rashi and Tosfos. Is he thinks the question that is behind their explanations, which is relevant to our whole discussion, is what is it that you pay for when you damage somebody's property? Is it that you pay to restore the object to what it was? Or is it that you pay for the monetary loss? What exactly is the nature of Tashlumin for Nezikin? You could ask a similar question, what exactly is the nature of insurance payments? Right, when insurance covers because you took a loss, are they paying you so that you can fix whatever you have broken so you can replace it? Or are they paying you for the monetary loss that you endured separate from that? So here the question is, what exactly is the nature of the Chi of Tashlomin? So within Rashi suggests that this is related to a Rambam and a Ravid in Hilchas Toin V'Nei. If you saw this morning's list, so the Rambam and the Ravid are on the list. And they talk about the following situation. Let's say you are mazik somebody's land, somebody's real estate. You poke all kinds of holes and ditches and other types of damage onto somebody's property. So now you have to fix it. And there's a dispute as to just how much it is. The mazik acknowledges some degree of damage, and the nizik says it's more. So what do you call that? Right, that's a bav metziah issue. What do you call that? Well, it relates to Motzei Mechaber Rabbi. You call it moda b'miktzas. Right. Normally, the Nizak would have to bring a raya to the mazik. But here the mazik is acknowledging part of it. So the rule normally is moda b'miktzas tiyazachi of shvuah. But we also have an exclusion. We don't take shvuas on karkos. So the Rambam says that here, because it's for karka, there's no shvuah. Okay, you follow that? So the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid just comments that yes, it's true that the victim here is asking the mazik to replace his damaged karka, but he also could ask for the money. And if he asks for the money, it should be treated like any other monetary claim and subject to modim mitzvahs. So Rav Soloveitchik noted the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim. Says, with both the Rambam and the Ravid, you see that there's a certain understanding of what Tashlumei Nezek is about. That it's not about replacing the value, but it's about replacing the item. It's about bringing the item back to what it was. So the Rambam is saying, essentially, you're demanding karka here as the victim. You're not demanding money, you're demanding karka. So therefore, there shouldn't be a shvuah. And so the Ravid's not really disagreeing. The Ravid is saying that yes, it's true, you're asking him to replace the karka, but because you could ask him for the money to replace the karka, we should view it as money. But the Rambam and the Ravid are both essentially saying that what we're dealing with here is the replacement of the object. So it's not viewed as you get paid for the value that's lost, but the nature of Tashlumei Nezikin is to put the object back to what it was. You follow? So when you damage karka, it's about bringing karka back to the original state. So says Rav Soloveitchik, that's also what we see here in Rashi. Right? Because Rashi is saying that if the produce would grow back perfectly, so then he'd be pater. So why is he pater? He's pater because he replaced the original item. Or the original item was replaced. He didn't do anything to replace the original item. But the original item was replaced. So therefore, there isn't anything left for the mazik to do. So, presumably, just to clarify Rashi's different stages, so we could have three things. We could have Mechalya Karna, which would have wiped out the bush completely. Lo Mechalya Karna, damaged nonetheless, which is where it's going to grow back, but it's going to grow back incomplete. And if it would grow back perfectly, then apparently that's nothing. There's no chiyuv at all. So why? Especially in light of Tosis's question, because that could have been value for the owner. So lemaisa, since it was replaced, so therefore what's done is fixed. And that doesn't leave any obligation on behalf of the mazik. Okay, everyone following so far?
Or Ravid holds in its restitution.
Says that the Rambam and the Ravid really both agree on this point. It's just the Ravid is adding that you could ask for it in the form of money, so therefore we should treat it like money. But he seems to acknowledge to the Rambam that the Iker goal here is bringing the land back to what it was. So he says, within both of them, you see this is so. But that's really what's happening. Okay. So with that, so then to look to Tosus. So Tosus is saying that the situation of Lo Machal Yekarna is not like Rashi, but it's a Tinfa Peiros Lahanasa kind of case. So why is that something that we need a separate limud for? Why is that something we need a special source for? So it seems like the issue is that it's not clear that anything actually happens to the object here. That since the object presumably remains in its same form, maybe you would have said there's no hezek at all. So therefore, the chiddush maybe here is that no, there is damage to the object, even though it's not the normal shein type of damage where something is simply consumed, but this does count as a difference to the object. Now that's important, because if it's not a difference to the object, so then it's a question whether, based on what we're saying here from Rukhayim, whether there should be a Chiyuv Tashlum. And as Vesalvechik goes on to explain, that's why the Gemara in Gittin, which I didn't put on today, but can take a look at it tomorrow, the Gemara in Gittin contains the view, Daf Nun Gimel, that Hezek She'eino Nikur Lachme Hezek. That if you do some kind of damage to something, let's say it's a halachic damage, so it doesn't change the object at all, but now you can't use it, that may not be considered Nezek. And the Rambam, I'll give you that to look at also, when he codifies that idea, Hezek She'eino Nikur Lav Shmei Hezek, he essentially writes that out, that because the object wasn't changed, so therefore it's not called Hezek. So that all flows from this idea that what is the Tashlumin for? The Tashlumin is because the object has been damaged and now has to be restored. But if the object hasn't been damaged, even if there is an impact on it, that's not going to necessarily rank. Now this is significant because not everyone saw it the same way. So for example, Rav Naftali Trupp, also known as the Garnat, or the Grunt, depending on how you read it. But the Rav Naftali Trupp was the Rosh Yeshiva in Radin. And in his Shiurim, it's in the Kofir Aleph, Naftali Trupp understood that Tosfos is coming to tell you that there's a chiyuv even for tinfa peiros lahanasa, because you would have thought that maybe there's only a chiyuv when there's damage to the item itself and not to the usage. And this is about usage. No one's going to be able to use this food, but essentially it's still the same. But that's a little problematic in light of how the Rav understood it, which is why he understood it differently. And if you look in Rav Asher Weiss's Sefer on Bava Kamma, so he also understands it differently. He makes reference to the Garnat or of Naftali Trupp, and he says, yes, you do have such a distinction in halacha in general between the item and the value of the item, but that's not what we're talking about here, because ultimately this is an impact on the object itself. Okay, so that's something to consider. Now here's just something interesting also, and this is an interesting thing to look at during Seder, just to see how different makoros can be interpreted completely differently. So the Rav Soloveitchik in the Shiurim, he says, if you look at the Rashba, now the Rashba we mentioned, remember a few minutes ago, the Rashba says that the owner could have chosen to do this himself, because maybe it would have been beneficial to him. But nonetheless, he can still make the mazik pay for it. So how does that impact on our stamp question, or on our painting question? What do you think? Does that impact at all? Sorry?
You should be done with
it. Yeah, the Rashba's basic position is that maybe this whole distinction about Machal Yekarna and not Machal Yekarna is because in the not Machal Yekarna situation, maybe it's the kind of thing which not only is it going to grow back, but maybe it'll grow back better. And maybe the owner would have chosen this and would have even done it himself. Would have made his own animals eat this produce so that it's going to grow back better and more valuable. And yet, when somebody else does it, he still has the right to demand tashlumin from that guy. So, do you want to use that to try to understand the stamp situation or the painting situation? What do you think? Does that have any relevance, Sammy?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the person that won the auction is in full control.
The auction, again, was another, we have to build on that. We haven't got that yet. Let's say where you have a stamp, you have two stamps and somebody's mazik one. Or you have two paintings and somebody's mazik one, so the other one doubles in value. So does the Rashba help with that case? What do you think? Jed?
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing.
Okay.
Damaging in a way that that even the person may have wanted to do themselves because it would raise the value of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a payment that has to happen.
Okay, so you think the Rashba indicates that he should get paid for it?
Yeah, but then again, also it's not that the owner would have done that himself. He obviously didn't. The person who had two
but maybe he would have
didn't. Well, we only talked about the raise
or he could
double.
Have. Right.
So if it would have raised more than double, then maybe I would hear it. But if it just raises double, then it's the same. It's just the same price.
Okay. So do you think the Rashba tilts things one way or another? You're hedging your bets here, no pun intended.
Maybe not. Maybe just any time you do it now.
Okay, so here's what's interesting, and this is just something you can look at tomorrow during Seder. So Rav Soloveitchik in the Shiurim, he thought, like you started to say before the hedging, that the Rashba is relevant to the stamp case. This is like one paragraph in the Shiurim of the Rav, that it seems to be that if you look at the Rashba's position, that in the stamp case it's parallel, and you would have to pay for being mazik the stamp for the painting, even though the owner now has already recouped his value with the other item going up. But what's interesting, just in terms of different interpretations you can get from reading the same thing, if you look at Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein's Sefer, in the Chashuk Echemed, which is available also online in HebrewBooks.org, so he also has a discussion on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, here in this Gemara. He brings many other rayas, which we'll probably also talk about tomorrow, some of his other rayas, and he also has a whole other svara, which, God willing, we'll talk about tomorrow. But if you look, he makes reference to the Rashba, the same Rashba, and he understands it to go completely in the opposite direction. That he understands the Rashba to be a proof that he should not have to pay. So it's just an interesting lesson in how the same Makoros can sometimes be read totally opposite ways. So this is something for you to ponder, how he sees the Rashba differently.
Hi. The Brazilian thinks that for the Rashba, the value of something goes up, you wouldn't have to pay.
He thinks that there's a case you can make from the Rashba that he's reading it clearly differently.
Yeah.
But that, so you should read it inside. If not, tomorrow we'll try to spend a little more time on Rav Zilberstein's position in general, because he has a lot more to say about this topic. But among the things he says, which includes different rayas and different svaras to this point, he also quotes the same Rashba to the opposite conclusion.
That only if the value goes up.
That, right, if the value ends up being more, he's not going to have to pay. Hi. Chashuk Echemer, it's called. So if you don't have a physical copy around, it's available on HebrewBooks.org. Okay, so I want to continue tomorrow with, again, more rayas and more approaches to this issue, and ultimately get us into the Banksy case. But just to close off on one point, so what is the svara here? You know, the Gemara seems to say that we need a source to say that not only is there a chiyuv when there's a hezek that's machal yikana, but there's also a chiyuv when it's not machal yikana. So why would I have thought not that way? Why would I have thought that, oh, had I not had a separate pasuk, that this is something that I would have been pasuk from? Do you have any thoughts about this? Why would I think that there shouldn't be a chiyuv if I do a hezek that's not machal yikana? So assuming that it's going to grow back fully, except Rashi's case of it's going to grow back incompletely. But it's interesting that language is that it's not really so bad. Not that it's not bad, but it's not so bad. So the Sefer Yosef Das, which is the Sefer of Ha'aretz on Daf Yomi, you can also find online. So he has a svara there. He thinks that maybe these kinds of things, impartial damages, you're not destroying an item, but you're just chipping away at it a little bit, thinks that maybe those are very common, and it's hard to totally avoid them. So therefore, people are generally not as makir on this. And that maybe that's why you could have had a havamina to say that the only time there's a chiyuv tashlum is when you destroy an object. But when you scruff it up a little bit, and when you maybe reduce its value, but without fully destroying it, maybe there shouldn't be a chiyuv for that. And that's why we need the chiddush to say that even such cases are also chayiv. Then he also mentions another possibility that where maybe there's no svara, but maybe that's the pasuk. The pasuk, which the Gemara also quotes, tumo, something is completely destroyed. So maybe back in our whole sense of applying the psukim across the board, so maybe you would have thought that that's part of what the chiyuv here is. And if it's not fully destroyed, then whether or not people are makbid and upset about it, nonetheless, it's still a tour. But to go back to Rav Asher Weiss in his piece about the nature of Nezikin, in Simon Tess and the Sefer Menachos Asher and Bava Kamma and the new editions. So he says that he thinks that's all, he's not addressing that Sefer, but he's saying this question of the Havamina of Lo Machal Yekarna, says it never meant to assume that you'd be putter. There's no real svara, he writes, to pater somebody just because it's not machal yekarna. So the Gemara is just trying to figure out what category it should go in. And this goes back to this whole discussion mentioned last week about how the machayiv of the zikin is still the general tzad hashava, and the avos have different details. So one could have thought that shein, by its nature, is only machal yekarna. And if it's not that, then it has to be regular. But that's what the Gemara is trying to figure out. Not that there's a havamina to pater somebody for this. Like we should say you shouldn't be chaya for the nezek. It's just a question of what category does it go into. All right, so we'll just quickly recap. And then our agenda for tomorrow, we want to continue this question because there are several other sugyas and rayas that are brought in. And then to eventually take that to the Banksy question, which is slightly different, but is building on clearly some of the same yesodos. So we raise this question, what if there is a active hezek in the Banksy question that was that object became more valuable, but the more commonly asked question we're investigating first is that the nizak has another object which becomes twice as valuable because of his active hezek, so therefore he breaks even, no pun intended. So is there a chiyuv on the mazik? We saw that many assumed that this discussion is found in a lot of places. Many assumed that our Gemara is relevant, the Gemara that makes a theoretical distinction between Machal Yekarna and not Machal Yekarna. And Rashi and Tosfos and the Rashba all understand it differently. Rashi understands Lo Machal Yekarna means it's going to grow back, but not as good as it was the first time. Tosfos says, but then why isn't that a complete loss? Because the Bidlam themselves could have taken that, so it must mean something else, like Tinfa Peris Lahanasa. And the Rashba has a different idea that maybe this is something the owner would have done himself, because theoretically it could have been beneficial to him, but nonetheless, he still has the right to demand payment from the Mazik. And we talked about the Soloveitchik's approach to Rashi and Tosfos based on the Rambam and the Ravid, and Reb Chaim, the Rambam and the Ravid say that if you damage somebody's karka, and there's an argument about how much, and the Mazik acknowledges some of it, you don't say Mod Mixos, he takes the Shvuah, because the Rambam says it's karka. And the Ravid says, yeah, it is, but he could also ask for money, so it should be treated that way. So Rav Soloveitchik and the Imre of Chaim pointed out that the Rambam and the Ravid both seem to understand the Tashlum and Ezekin as focused on restoring the item back to what it was, on bringing the karka back to its full state, and that that's the premise here, and maybe that's what Rashi is saying, that if it does grow back perfectly, so then you've replaced the item, or the item has been replaced, so there's no chiyuv tashlumin for that. And where's Tosfos coming from? Tosfos is saying that, as Soloveitchik understood it, you could have thought that this only affects the usage and doesn't affect the object itself. So the chiddush is, it does affect the object. But if it didn't, that's what the Gemara is telling us in Gittin, the Hezek She'eino Nikar. So according to the view that it's Potter, it's because indeed the object is not affected, and that's indeed how the Rambam formulates it. And so in contrast to the Garnat said that the whole Chapir is to show that even the Hishtamshus is what's affected, not the object itself. But that's problematic according to the way the Rav understood it. And indeed, Rav Asher Weiss also challenged the interpretation here and said that this is considered to be a damage to the object itself. And then we noted that the Rashba specifically, the Rav applied it to the stamp case and thought that it was a source to say that you are chayiv even if the stamp goes up. And Yitzchak Zilberstein, in his treatment that we'll talk about tomorrow, understood that Rashba in the exact opposite way. And then we also just discussed what is the svara to say the havamina, it's not the maskara, but the havamina that lo machaya karna should be pater. So in the Sefer Yosef Das, it says maybe people aren't so makbid on that because it happens very commonly and it's hard to prevent that kind of thing from happening totally. Or maybe it's just the pasuk, because there is a kasev. And Rav Asher Weiss independently said there's no svara to pater for this, but the Gemara was discussing just what category it should be in. Should it be a shein or regal, but didn't mean to imply that there was ever any svar or havamina that you should be putter in and of itself. Okay, so we will stop here. Who wants to daven for us? We have a volunteer. Jacob, you look like you're looking to volunteer.